Hello there and welcome. Today is Monday, November 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Obama answers questions about the incoming administration.
I can't be sure of anything. I think, like everyone else, we'll have to wait and see.
But protests continue as the vice president-elect says it will be an administration for all the people. America's addiction problem, the U.S. Surgeon General's warnings and solutions. Also ahead, Before Hogwarts, the new movie that takes place before Harry Potter. It's all on today's International Edition. Donald Trump's White House Chief of Staff-to-be Rens Priebus defended the president-elect's most recent picks for top administration posts. Trump announcing on Friday he'd chosen Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama for Attorney General, retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn for National Security Advisor, and Republican Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas for Director of Central Intelligence. Groups that oppose Trump are blasting his choices. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has more on the president-elect picks and the transition.
The man who will be Donald Trump's national security advisor, retired General Michael Flynn, was an early endorser during the Republican primaries. A one-time military intelligence specialist, Flynn became a top Trump surrogate on international security matters, often raising eyebrows in the process, tweeting, quote, "Fear of Muslims is rational."
Islam is a political ideology. It is a political ideology. It definitely hides behind this notion of it being a religion.
Trump has spoken approvingly of torture to gather intelligence, and his pick for CIA director, Congressman Mike Pompeo, criticized the Obama administration's rejection of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques on terror suspects. Meanwhile, one of the first senators to endorse Trump has been tapped to be America's next attorney general. Like Trump, Jeff Sessions is wary of Muslim refugees.
If you're not able to do a background check sufficiently, vet the applicants, you're not able to do that, then you're going to be admitting a certain number of people who have terrorist tendencies.
And he has long been a hardliner on illegal immigration.
Who has more right to a job in this country? A lawful immigrant who's here, a green card holder, or a citizen, or a person who entered the country unlawfully?
Like every president-elect, Trump is surrounding himself with people who share his viewpoint. Groups that oppose Trump are blasting his choices. The Southern Poverty Law Center accuses Sessions of aligning himself with xenophobic, racist groups. Democrats, meanwhile, question Flynn's temperament.
This is not someone who is prone to thoughtful consideration of issues. This is someone who often flies off at the handle and makes snap judgments on things that he may not fully understand.
Trump's White House chief of staff-to-be is defending all choices made to date.
They will do everything they can to protect and secure our country here and abroad every single day that they wake up in the morning.
Sessions and Flynn face Senate confirmation hearings.
The only fair thing to do is ask a lot of questions, very thorough questions, and then make an opinion.
But minority Democrats will be unable to block Trump nominees for administration posts by themselves, having curtailed a key procedural maneuver that Republicans once wielded against selections made by President Barack Obama. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. APEC leaders are pushing back against protectionism. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel announces a run for a fourth term. The International Criminal Court fears an exodus of African states. And therapy for vision loss could save bees. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues now. President Obama continuing his overseas trip, which started in Europe and ending in Peru, where he attended the annual Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Conference. And while there, he took questions from reporters who again asked about what he's saying to reassure world leaders about the incoming administration.
What I have said to world leaders is the same thing that I've said in a number of press conferences, which is the president-elect now has to put together a team and put forward specifics about how he intends to govern. And he hasn't had a full opportunity to do that yet. And so people should take a wait-and-see approach.
Well, since Election Day, there have been protests in cities across the United States from those unhappy with the outcome, including here in Washington on Saturday, where a white nationalist group gathered for a conference and claimed they are here to stay.
We say no to racist hate. We don't want a white state. We say no to racist hate. We don't want a white state. We say no to hate. We don't want a white state. We say no to racist hate. We don't want a white state. We say no to racist hate.
Get off it!
Well, Vice President-elect Mike Pence, speaking to CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday, tried to reassure Americans who are fearful.
I want to assure people who were disappointed in the election results, people are feeling anxious about this time in the life of our nation, that President-elect Donald Trump meant exactly what he said on election night, that he is going to be the president of all the people of the United States of America.
But there were also anti-Trump protests in European cities like Paris.
We're not contesting election results, but in every democracy, I believe there's a government and there's an opposition. In a healthy democracy, and we are that opposition. The things he has said are not okay. He has targeted everyone, women, Muslims, Mexicans, immigrants. Everything that makes America great, he has targeted, and we are here to say that is not okay.
Well, joining me now from France is Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Catherine, it's been an interesting time in Europe, given the demonstrations, along with President Obama's last official visit there.
This is pretty much seen as Barack Obama's farewell to Europe. He started his European trip in Athens, and then he moved on to the German capital, Berlin. And it was there that he met probably his strongest ally in Europe, Chancellor Angela Merkel. And there again, he reassured Angela Merkel that America stood by its commitments to NATO. The second part of his visit to the German capital, he was joined there by other European leaders, the French President François Hollande, and the Italian Prime Minister Renzi was also there. Again, he was talking about the bonds that tie the United States to Europe and saying that these are very enduring bonds. And whilst that's very much what Europe wanted to hear, I don't think they were that reassured, because while that was going on, the Europeans, particularly the European Commission, the official body of the European Union, they were becoming more and more alarmed about the announcements that were coming out of the president-elect's office. And there's been a lot of people wondering just who President-elect Trump is going to appoint as a Secretary of State. It might have been Obama saying, this is who we are, this is what we stand for. It was nice, it was a nice bookending to his time in office, but it hasn't really reassured people for the future.
What are their main concerns that you're hearing in Europe?
The main concern is that the United States will just disengage, if you like, from Europe, that it will just pull away, that it will not be that deep, enduring relationship that they've known since the end of the Second World War, that America under President Trump will be really very concerned about domestic issues, will be concerned to protect its own markets. Europe has now pretty much come to the conclusion that the big free trade agreement it thought it was going to get with America isn't now going to come off. So it's very worried about that. It's also a worry that a President Trump will be much closer to the British, will be much closer, say, to British President, to British Prime Minister Theresa May, and that you'll see that as more of an axis rather than President Trump in Europe. So that's still a big concern. The other concern is, again, the Baltic states. Is America going to play a leading role in defending those states on the border with Russia that concern for their safety?
And at the same time, all of this is happening with President Obama and world leaders. I understand there are protests there.
There are indeed. On Saturday here in Paris, there was probably about 500-600 joined a protest that went really around the center of Paris, went around the Eiffel Tower. protesting against President-elect Trump. There was not just American expatriates there. There were a lot of French people there who were holding up signs saying, don't vote for the far right, don't be succumb to the power of populism. There's also been similar demonstrations, of course, in the German capital, Berlin, and in the British capital, London. So there is a feeling that this wave of populism that's been seen in Britain with the anti-European feeling and in America with the populism of Donald Trump, that this could be a wave that sweeps across Europe as well, given that at the moment we're seeing primary elections here in France and the presidential elections next year, in which far-right leader Le Pen is predicted to get into the second round. And we've also got coming up the presidential election in Austria, where there is the possibility that a far-right candidate could win that election as well.
And the protesters out there, are they chanting? Are they just holding signs? Or what are they doing?
They're chanting, they're holding signs, they're marching. Pretty much the same sort of signs as we've been seeing in America. For example, this is not my president. Wake up, America, look at what you voted for. There was, in fact, here in the Paris rally, there was one particular woman who brought along her dog and said her dog is a Mexican dog and he's not a rapist and he's not going to steal jobs. And that dog got a lot of attention from the media and from other people marching along as well. There was also a lot of people holding up signs saying, I'm an expatriate and I'm ashamed of what my country has done. Really a broad spectrum of all ages, actually. And some of the people I spoke to on the march, who in their late middle ages, and said they'd never been on a rally before. This was the first protest march they'd ever been on, but they felt this was the one they had to come on.
Are there any opposing views that are protesting the protesters?
No, not as yet. There were a couple of people who I interviewed alongside the rally who were saying, well, he's elected now, you're going out and protesting isn't going to do anything. But no, we haven't had this sort of counter demonstrations at any of the events here in Europe.
All right, Paris-based journalist Catherine Field, thanks so much for your time. Turning now to social media, Michael Lippin is here with what is trending. Michael, I hear there's some chatter about the future First Lady.
Hi, Laurie. Donald Trump confirmed on Sunday that his wife Melania and their son Barron will not be moving into the White House when he's sworn in as president in January. Trump confirmed an earlier report in the New York Post that Barron would stay with Melania at their home in Trump Tower in New York City so that the 10-year-old can finish his academic year at a private high school in Manhattan. That report got lots of people talking on Facebook about Melania and Barron, more than 1 million, in fact.
Wow, so what are they saying?
Well, one Facebook user, Melanie Kellum Beard, wrote this. So Melania thinks it's best that Barron stays in his own school and routine for now. She's putting her child first. Sounds like a good mom to me. But there's also been some criticism about the security arrangements that would have to be made if the First Lady and her son do stay in Trump Tower, namely all the Secret Service agents who would have to protect the building. Facebook user Corey Alexander Walker said, "This arrangement will cost taxpayers money. If Obama did this, conservatives would be angry."
All right. Well, I understand American rapper Kanye West is also getting into the political spotlight.
He is.
People been talking about him on social media. What's going on with that?
Yeah, well, it's because of what he said about Trump. 2 days after Kanye, an African-American, shocked many of his fans for telling a California concert that he didn't vote but would have picked Trump if he had, he made another lengthy political statement, some would say a rant, at another concert in California on Saturday night. This time, Kanye said that he was embracing Trump's political incorrectness and said that people in the audience who supported Hillary Clinton and felt like they lost had been lied to by Facebook, Google, and so on. Kanye also performed just 3 songs, leaving some disappointed fans to demand refunds on social media. His detractors also are using hashtag KanyeIsOverParty. It's one of the top trends right now on Twitter in the U.S. But even the backlash against Kanye is attracting criticism. An editor for the InfoWars opinion blog, which is very controversial, his name is Paul Joseph Watson, he used the hashtag #KanyeIsOverParty to say this to Kanye's critics: "Amazing how you're all for diversity until it comes to diversity of opinion, which cannot be tolerated." That's his view. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, Michael. You can follow him at Michael_Lippin. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. A top U.S. health official says addiction should no longer be seen as a character flaw. The U.S. Surgeon General has made the plea in a new report on substance abuse called Facing Addiction in America. Calling it one of the most pressing public health crises of our time, the report claims 21 million Americans are battling substance abuse, a number higher than the number of cancer patients. Joining me now for more on this, William Moyers, Vice President of Public Affairs and Community Relations for the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation in Minnesota.
It's the first time that the United States Surgeon General has tackled an issue like substance use problems in the same way that the Surgeon General reported on tobacco and its impacts in 1964, and as a result, there was wholesale change in public perception and public policy. We at the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation hope that the result will be the same for this report. Addiction is everybody's issue. It always has been. It's a public health crisis. But until now, a vast majority of people have seen it as somebody else's problem or have viewed it as a criminal justice issue or have not seen it for what it is. And so the Surgeon General's report is really a profound moment.
Talk a little bit about how big of a problem this is in the United States, and is it growing?
This is the biggest problem in the United States from a healthcare perspective. Addiction is a chronic illness. It impacts 1 in 10 Americans, according to this report, and yet only about 1 in 10 of those Americans are ever going to access treatment. So substance use disorders, which are more commonly known as alcoholism or drug addiction, this is everybody's problem. And unfortunately, for too long, the public and the policymakers have viewed it either as somebody else's problem or a problem that can be fixed or solved with policies that have not really worked. So look, we have an epidemic of substance use problems in this country. The opioid epidemic is well chronicled. Alcohol misuse and alcoholism are terrible problem in ERs and on the roadways and in homeless shelters. The Surgeon General's report really puts an official stamp, if you will, on the pervasiveness of substance use problems in America. The good news is that it goes beyond just identifying the problem in very ominous statistics. It also advances solutions. And that's why this report is comprehensive, not just in identifying the problems caused by substance use disorders, but also in identifying ways to resolve them.
What are some of the solutions?
One of the startling statistics in the Surgeon General's report is the economic impact of drug and alcohol misuse and addiction. The Surgeon General says it costs this country $442 billion a year. And the Surgeon General emphasizes that that dollar amount tops diabetes at $245 billion a year. So what the Surgeon General is saying here is much more than just we Americans have a problem with substances. The Surgeon General is saying this is the number one health problem in the country, and whether it's alcoholism or drug dependence or the misuse of substances, this is a problem that affects every single American in one way, shape, or form. What are the solutions? The Surgeon General says that for every dollar that's invested in treatment options for substance use disorders, saves about $4 in health care costs and $7 in criminal justice costs. So the real bottom line of the report here is that treatment can work and recovery is possible. And when somebody recovers from a substance use problem, not just that person or that person's family benefits, but all of us benefit. I'm a perfect example of that. I've been in long-term recovery from addiction for more than 20 years now. And the fact that I am in recovery, managing my chronic illness, is a benefit to my family, my community, my neighborhood. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a citizen. I'm an engaged father. I'm a voter, all because I have overcome my substance use disorder. So we at Hazel and Betty Ford see this as a historic moment, an opportunity for us as a nation to confront addiction for the health care problem that it is, and to come up with solutions that really begin to turn the tide and promote treatment and recovery in a way that will benefit every American.
All right. We appreciate your perspective. William Moyers, Vice President of Public Affairs and Community Relations for the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation in Minnesota. Let's turn now to entertainment. How about a little magic? In Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, filmmaker David Yates recreates the on-screen magical world we came to love in the Harry Potter franchise, but without its iconic characters. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling wrote the screenplay, introducing the Magical Society of New York City, an ocean away from Hogwarts School of Wizardry, and long before the story of the boy who lived unfolded. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
New York, 1926. A destructive force is loose on the streets of the city.
Whatever it is, it must be stopped.
Living in secrecy, the Magical Society of America is in turmoil, fearing exposure and backlash from the non-magical folk, the non-mag, as they call them.
Impound that case, Graves.
Please, you don't understand. Nothing in there is dangerous.
We'll be the judges of that.
The Magical Congress of the United States of America suspects Newt Scamander is the cause of the outbreak.
It was open?
Just a smidge.
The English magical zoologist who arrives in New York City with a case full of endangered magical creatures plans to release them in their natural habitats. J.K. Rowling says Newt Scamander was the famed author of a textbook Harry Potter used at school.
While I was writing Potter, I became quite interested in Newt Scamander. So I knew quite a lot about Newt. He's been traveling the world studying magical creatures. He calls himself a magizoologist.
First trip to America?
Yes.
Academy Award winner Eddie Redmayne interprets the eccentric Scamander, who finds himself at the epicenter of the crisis when some of his creatures escape. His animals are believed to be responsible for the death and destruction in the city.
You know which of your creatures was responsible, Mr. Scamander?
Look at the marks.
No creature did this.
Scamander enlists the help of two witches and Jacob, a non-mage and aspiring baker, who crossed paths with Scamander after the two accidentally switch cases. Jacob's was full of donuts. The wizard sets out to retrieve his escaped creatures and find out who is really behind the attacks. It may come as no surprise that these culprits also afflicted the Harry Potter world decades later.
There are ways in which we connect to the Potter books that I think people will find surprising.
They think this is related to Grindelwald's attacks in Europe.
We're talking about the first time a wizard rose and threatened the world order.
Harry Potter's theme against the bigotry and the idea of racial purity is repeated in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. But while Potter fans can revel in the message and the magic of a new film, the script falls rather flat, and the cast does not quite connect and excite as Harry Potter's did. However, J.K. Rowling promises more to come in the newly developed franchise, and despite this slow start, Harry Potter fans can live on that promise. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
I want to be a wizard.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In recent remarks to foreign journalists, Secretary of State John Kerry emphasized the importance of U.S. engagement in some of the most difficult challenges our world faces. On security, the United States led the effort to form a coalition of over 60 nations that is helping to stop ISIL after it swept across Iraq and Syria, taking over cities, destroying communities, and murdering civilians. After 35 years of diplomatic silence, the United States not only helped start negotiations with Iran, but led the effort that ensured that Iran's nuclear program is and will remain exclusively peaceful. We continue to lead the fight against HIV/AIDS. As a result, said Secretary Kerry, today we're on the brink of seeing the first generation of AIDS-free children being born in Africa. And that's through PEPFAR, the United States program to help provide health care and change lives for people. When the recent Ebola epidemic first arose in West Africa, many predicted that it would claim as many as a million lives before it ran its course. But 3,000 U.S. troops sent to West Africa by President Barack Obama worked with personnel from many other nations to build up local health care capacity. We summoned an international movement, and guess what? Those million people didn't die, said Secretary Kerry. On climate change, the United States made a pact with China that set an example of how to reduce emissions on a global basis, a move that helped set the stage for the signing of the Paris Agreement. We help craft the Kigali Agreement that will end the production and use of hydrofluorocarbons, and we help to set aside millions of square kilometers of ocean in the Antarctic, the Pacific, and the Atlantic to save our waters and fisheries. I have never seen the United States of America more engaged to the benefit of everybody else. In order to try to help other countries work their way through crises, to make peace and stability so we can go home and pay attention to things here, said Secretary of State Kerry. I've never seen us more engaged in more countries at one time on more issues of significance with greater consequence than now.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.